Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Oh, it's such a glorious thing when this time comes around every day. We get to get together and talk, and we're doing it again. Unfortunately, 4 o'clock Jolly Ned with another Jolly Ned and the Jollettes appearance. So we've got that to worry about. So we have to pack a lot in this hour. Therefore, we will start it off with Mr. Rob Sampson. Well, actually, they call him Senator Rob Sampson, who spoke at great length many times in the special session. He got his year's worth of legislating in during a few minutes the other day. Hello there, Rob.
Hello there, Todd. Good afternoon. Glad to join you for some unfettered freedom, at least for an hour.
Have you recovered from I don't even know. I assume you did an all-nighter on Tuesday to Wednesday. How did that go?
Yeah, more or less. I went in at 8 a.m. on that morning, and I think I left at 6 a.m. the following morning. So almost 20
minutes. And I thought it would be good to have you here to do a little recap for us so we could get your perspective on the session. These sessions go by, normally it's not a whole session in a day, but it was a special session. You guys did 4 big things, I guess, and now it's all done and gone until September when another special session is expected, right?
That is the rumor, although I am really hoping we do not go back in September, because I can only imagine what politically charged nonsense the Democrats will bring to us a month or two before the election.
Can we start with your conclusion that you just made, which is a constant in our discussions, but it is striking me in a different way today, this sense that no matter what we're doing, we're up against a group of people whose only actions are, or whose only motivation for their actions is furthering their own power and rigging the system. I don't believe there's any good government involved here. Even if you take there's a black and Hispanic caucus or something like that in the Democrats in the state Senate. Is that right?
That is correct. Although it's not supposed to be exclusive of Republicans, but I don't know any Republicans that are members.
Okay, but if we look at that caucus, I'm just making the assumption, not having studied them at all, that they're pushing all these bad pieces of legislation because they feel the same political risk that Democrats in general feel, but they feel it more acutely because they actually represent these neighborhoods that have been so poorly represented by Democrats, and therefore they have to fabricate something that they can call a response. And in my mind, it's a non-responsive response that they get to shove out there and make a lot of noise about. Is that your take on it?
I have a few things I would say. First thing is, you're absolutely correct that the legislature does not make policy for the benefit of the citizens any longer. The bills that come before the legislature are designed for one purpose, and you nailed it. It is for furthering the electoral success of the party in power. And almost every bill we do is not focused on making good policy, but rather scoring points with the public in a dishonest way, or making the opposition party, the Republicans in this case, look bad. And sadly, most of my Republican colleagues you know, they crumble under the weight of that. And I can give you a couple examples, including one that happened just this past special session.
Okay.
Take the four bills. First off, I mean, the election bill, which it was about COVID-19, this was just designed to make Republicans ultimately vote no and therefore say that they want people to suffer and potentially die rather than being able to vote for COVID. Except the Democrats foolishly misplayed their hand and they gave us a bill that we could actually vote for. Had they included things in that bill, like the mass mailing of absentee ballot applications that the Secretary of State is responsible for, Republicans would have voted no. So I think that we actually benefited in that particular case because the Democrats, for whatever reason, they misplayed their hand. I think it's just because they're overconfident. You have a bill about insulin capping the price, capping the cost of the copay for insulin. But really, this bill is not about that. It's about jacking up insurance premiums, socialism. And this bill has nothing to do with the emergency that we're under. There's nothing to do with COVID. And also, it doesn't even go into effect until March of 2022. So clearly, that bill was there just to create a mail flyer for this upcoming election for any Republicans foolish enough, like myself, to vote against it.
And then, well, does it only impact, does it impact more than just insulin?
No. Well, I mean, the bill itself,
it's
certainly, because the bill ultimately takes the redistribution of the cost that they're capping on the insulin purchase and adds it to the premium of all other insurance premium payers.
Well, no, but is it strictly about that one drug?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And that sounds like a good one because it's very clear what they're up to and it gives you a chance to explain why it's a bad thing to do what they do. But it's still a manipulative piece of legislation designed to make it look like Republicans have no compassion. And I guess this is the manipulation that you're talking about, that they can propose legislation designed to make you guys look like you aren't them. And because there is no counter narrative that's been established in the political marketplace, that is a conservative or a liberty based viewpoint, that you guys have nothing to fall back on. You do as an individual senator, Senator Rob Sampson, who argues for liberty-based values, for constitutional values. You've created a premise for yourself, but other Republicans are kind of left out in the wilderness because they don't have philosophical ground that they've carved out for themselves and defined to voters. And that creates a real vulnerability to the kind of flyer that says, Senator Joe Blow is a hater. He voted against cheaper insulin for all. And what are people supposed to do in response to that?
Precisely. And consequently, I was the only no vote in the Senate. When the same bill ran in the House, I think there were four Republican no's. But I would definitely tell your listeners that they should congratulate those four Republican legislators who had the courage to do the right thing in the face of what they knew was going to be an attack politically for this upcoming election. Just since yesterday, my opponent in my race for November has already come out with his own video where he's taking credit for, you know, being the nice guy who would have voted for that bill and saying that evil Rob Sampson wants to hurt people, which is a ridiculous argument. I don't know anyone who actually wants to hurt people, and certainly not by, you know, casting a vote in the legislature. So there must be much more to the argument, but that's what they do. They simplify the argument. They put people into categories using identity politics. And then when they propose a policy that benefits one group, they put Republicans in a spot where it's either you're going to help the one group and get the same credit that we are, or you're going to stand on principle and say we shouldn't be putting people into different buckets and that we should write policies that affect everyone equally, in which case you're the bad guy. And
but ultimately, if Republicans cave into that kind of manipulation, then they're just kicking the can down the road. It's going to be worse for them next time. And ultimately, they're destroying the party. Ultimately, they're destroying a premise upon which anybody can run as a Republican in the future because they've never argued for the principles that make conservatism or liberty-based thinking superior vastly to the big government socialism of the left, which ultimately is destroying the state and destroying the country.
You're absolutely correct, and we are witnessing it. We're witnessing it on a national level, and we've certainly seen it happen in Connecticut over the last decade that I've been in office. I started the conservative caucus in the legislature a few sessions ago in an effort to try and create a group of people that we could lean on each other to have the courage and go out there and do the right thing on these bills, and we would not be facing them alone. But sadly, even the conservative caucus has walked away from that. I think that there are 13 members in that caucus today, and yet only four of them had the courage to do the right thing. The others took the political vote because it is non-conflict. And they should be ashamed of themselves because they know
they
very
should.
Well what the right vote was, and they decided not to take it. And I don't want to cast
any aspersions.
Go ahead.
Well, I do. That's my territory. I cast aspersions. So I will invite them all on, and I will introduce them as members of the formerly conservative caucus, and we'll see how it goes.
Well, I don't want to go after my closest allies and colleagues. That's not the purpose. These are still the best.
I know it's not your purpose, but the thing in politics, tell me if this isn't true. If nobody is out there paving the road you want to travel on, then it's much harder for you to go down that road. You need people out there clearing the path, creating a smooth surface, and saying, come on, I've been out here arguing for this. Now the coast is clear for you to come and pursue it. And if this is the big problem, it seems to me, if conservatives don't talk conservative talk, if they don't lay out conservative arguments for the people to absorb and then push back out into the marketplace of ideas and spread, then the whole thing just collapses.
I couldn't have said it better, Todd. That's why I continue to do what I'm going to do, because I didn't get elected to make friends. I don't want to make enemies either, but I'm going to stand on principle. I'm going to cast a vote that allows me to move the agenda that I want to move, which is an agenda of retaining the American system of government, freedom and opportunity, genuine capitalism, not crony capitalism, and not using political power for gamesmanship or electioneering. That's what I want to do, and I'm going to do that. It allows me to put my head on the pillow every night to know I did the right thing. And it's sad that I end up being 35-1 and therefore a target for my political opponents, because I was the one that actually carried the banner for the thing that the Republicans should have done collectively. And had every Republican opposed that bill on principle, it wouldn't be a non-starter. The Democrats would have nothing to say. We would have made the case. Therefore, identity politics and picking and choosing winners and losers, and we are instead trying to lower insurance premiums across the board. That would be the argument, and it would be a legitimate argument that people would notice. Instead, it's
and you wouldn't be vulnerable. You wouldn't be vulnerable to attack that says Rob Sampson is the only person who stood up and voted against this, as if you're an outlier instead of pursuing something heroic. Rob, if you can hold on a few minutes, we'll take a quick break and we'll do a little bit more of the conversation. Stay with us here on WTIC. Talking to State Senator Rob Sampson, the guy who stands up for conservative values in Hartford. We need more of you, Rob. Where are we going to find them?
There are a few good candidates running in this upcoming November election, and I'm doing my best to encourage them. Joe LaPorta in the 12th District running against Senator Christine Cohen. He's fabulous. He's a man that I cannot wait to have up there, because he's going to help me turn those 35-1 votes into 34-2 votes, and hopefully a lot better than that.
Awesome.
There's Pam Salamone, who's running in Cheshire against Representative Linehan, who I know is a regular guest of yours. She is a strong and very proud.
Just to be clear,
she'll do the right thing.
Just to be clear, she hasn't been on since a little bit into the COVID thing. So it's been like at least 3 months, I think, since she's been on. Just want you to know.
Okay. Yeah, there's quite a few. There's Kim Fiorello, who is running down in Greenwich for state representative. She is fabulous. There's Ellie Koussidis, who's running against the majority leader of the Senate, Bob Duff, another proud and strong conservative who will take the hard votes, who will do the right thing. And that's what we need, Dad. We need to get people that are not just Republicans, but people that are principled Republicans who will stand in the face of the not only the Democrats and their political games, but the other Republicans that are happy to go along because they don't want the conflict.
So, Rob, you laid out for us that what Democrats do with their policymaking is they don't pursue policy, they pursue campaign weapons. And anything they're passing for the purpose of creating a campaign weapon, either to ingratiate themselves with their own base or to punish Republicans for being Republicans and being the minority. And I find this discouraging and confusing about how we should proceed, because what is the point of arguing politics if there's actually nobody on the other side but a facade, but a bunch of fakers? There must be some better way to do battle against people whose approach is anti-political and anti-policy, and it's nothing but the raw pursuit of power with no beneficial pursuits for the best interests of the average person, for the average citizen, for the state as a whole. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, there is another ingredient, and I would say that it's not just for their political electioneering purposes, but it's also to move their agenda. And up until recently, they used to disguise their agenda, which is absolute socialism and a remaking of this country into something else. And amazingly, just in the last several years, I've noticed that they are totally open about that. And I think that's the biggest shock and the biggest shame, that that's okay to do. And you can still win elections even holding those policies. And that concerns me greatly about the future of this country.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. There is no way you can believe in America and want for its best interest and support the agenda items that Democrats are pushing. They are pushing anti-American, anti-democratic ideas. That is small d democratic. The idea that the people should have the ability to affect the movement of government policy based on things like our people in our neighborhood are being killed by the police we pay, or being punished, you know, face an adversarial relationship with our cops, or whatever the argument is. If that's what urban voters are facing, and that's what they feel, there should be mechanisms in place through which they can seek redress in the political process and be able to change policy. And they haven't been able to do that. And now that there's a big moment, the left is running around trying to make it seem like they are providing remedies. But even if they were, what does that say about the last 50, 60 years of their utter control of policies in urban areas?
I completely agree. I mean, the people that live in the cities in Connecticut and across the country are suffering under policies created by Democrats. So it's very shocking to find that the Democrats are staking a claim that they are the ones that have been beneficial to their movement. And here they are today standing up to the American principles they allege that are the problem, but actually are the solution that is untried in those cities. And that's the fault of Republicans for failing to argue our principles and values and giving up all of the places where people's ideas are formed, in entertainment, in education, in the news media. We have given all that up to the extreme left, and they, of course, have done their best to make sure to teach people a lot of falsehoods, that this is a terrible country with racist beginnings, and that socialism is somehow a beneficial construct that supersedes capitalism, which they are trying to equate in our school systems with racism today. This is what we have failed to push back against, and we are reaping the reward now.
Yes. All right, we've just got 30 seconds left. Anything else you want to say?
I would just want to take a second, since we started talking about the special session, to let people know that they should continue to call the governor's office and send him emails to ask him to veto the police accountability bill, which is not a police accountability bill at all. It is an anti-police bill, and it will make everyone's community less safe, particularly if you live in an urban environment. The bill passed both chambers of the legislature, but if the governor vetoes it, I do not think that the legislature has the votes to override his veto. So political pressure made the difference in tolls, and I think we can do it again if we act fast.
All righty. Call the governor's office. Tell him no to the police bill. Senator Rob Sampson, thank you, sir, for taking the time to talk with us. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks as always, Todd.
All righty. There's Rob Sampson from Wilcott and some good conservative politicking going on there with Rob. We're going to, well, President Obama spoke today at John Lewis's, whatever it is that's going on. I don't know if it's the actual funeral or some kind of adjacent memorial service, but I want to play you some of what he said, and it kind of feeds into what we're talking about. And then we'll take some phone calls. So stay with us on WTIC. TIC. Yeah, the governor in a half hour. I apologize. Not that I have any control over, because obviously if I did, it wouldn't happen. But he's doing a press conference. We have to make the best of the time we have available. So President Obama speaking earlier today at the funeral service of Representative John Lewis. And I want you to listen to this. I have nothing against John Lewis. I think he was a heroic figure for his participation and risk to his personal well-being that he took and the beating that he took, the beatings that he took for the civil rights movement. My point about John Lewis is that I think in the last 30 years or his period of time in Congress, that he provided no solutions for blacks, and that this is what has become of the civil rights movement, that it got mainstreamed, that certain people won some electoral victories, and it allowed there to be created a front of black acceptance into mainstream politics. And in return, the blacks who won those offices and who hold those offices do nothing to further the cause of black America, poor America, urban America. The things they claim to be fighting for have been robbed into the scam of mainstream Democratic politics. So President Obama was speaking today and honoring John Lewis, and I just thought this language, it's interesting to listen how confusing it is and how deceptive it is.
At most American of ideas, the idea that any of us, ordinary people without rank or wealth or title or fame, can somehow point out the imperfections of this nation and come together and challenge the status quo and decide that it is in our power to remake this country that we love.
Now, it should be in our power to remake this country that we love. And it should be our perception that that's the right thing for us to do, that when we see something that is wrong, we should work to change it. However, this argument that President Obama is making is a smokescreen for utter failure in terms of improving the lives of black America and turning around poverty and turning around urban America. And it's fraudulent in terms of the tribute to John Lewis, because the implication here is that John Lewis was somehow a force for change post-civil rights movement in his political career. The point is about his political career. These things are being fused together in a single person when his heroism is not in his politics. Pursuing socialism in America, trying to convert us into a big, anti-democratic, bureaucratic, immovable political object does not serve the goals that Obama is alluding to when he talks like this.
Can somehow point out the imperfections of this nation and come together and challenge the status quo and decide that it is in our power to remake this country that we love.
Yes, but it shouldn't be in our power to claim to love the country and remake it into the image of the Soviet Union. This is my problem with President Obama's statement today. It's my problem with the whole conflation of John Lewis as a political figure, as a politician, with the heroic young man who marched with Martin Luther King.
Until it more closely aligns with our highest ideals.
Well, our highest ideals are not the Soviet Union, are not Fidel Castro. Those are not our ideals, are not communist China. Although communist China is more capitalist than the Democrats might want America to be. So let's just be straight about this instead of this big smokescreen of John Lewis and the Congressional Black Caucus actually being for something that has improved the lives of minority America.
What a radical idea. What a revolutionary notion. This idea that any of us, ordinary people, a young kid from Troy.
No. Let's not do that. Let's not try to make heroic his political career. There is nothing empowering for the people of creating huge government bureaucracy. And where we can see now that it's taken away our ability to do competitive politics, it's taken away our ability to have a capitalist society, to perform the miraculous advancement of people that we have done historically. I feel like America is not America anymore, that there's this facade that remains, and the guts have been, what's the word? Well, exorcised. I'm trying to think of the word for cleaning like a fish, whatever. Disemboweled. Okay, we can do that one. 860-522-9842. Dave calling from Brantford. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Todd. No greetings for you. I did hear the President Obama speak, and I thought it was an unseemly partisan screed. But the thing I most want to point out, he was talking about voter suppression, and he dragged the Postal Service into it. Now, because I don't have a tape or a transcript, I can't quote the exact words, but this gets at what we tried to talk about last week, but I had a bad connection and couldn't do too good. The Postal Service wants to charge to transport the mail with your absentee ballot. And so I do believe President Obama was trying to conflate the Postal Service as part of the racial conspiracy to stop Democrats from voting. That's just awful.
How does that work? Explain it a little more.
Well, I guess there's lawsuits in several of the many states that the absentee ballot applications and the votes themselves will need postage. And it is considered that it's a form of a poll tax, that you have the nerve that you have to pay postage for your ballot to arrive at wherever it's going.
And that's a racist impediment?
Well, that's what the lawsuit is saying. And I could tell you what the news article said, that, you know, the lack of credit cards, the lack of computers, the lack of internet access by the Democrat voters. Therefore, they are getting, you know, not an even shake at voting. The stamps need to be free. And I think that is what Obama was alluding to when he dragged the post office into that rather long partisan screed about voter suppression, because they ask for ID when you register to vote, that you should do it in advance, you know, the regular stuff to make sure the voters are real.
Yeah, that's pretty bizarre.
Maybe you could find poll quote.
Yeah, I'm looking for it right now, but I haven't had any luck. Thank you, Dave, for the call. I'll see what I can find for you. 860-522-9842. Tim in Hamden, hi.
Hi. Yeah, it's ironic. I was calling about something else, but it is sort of related. I was going to talk about the president officially tweeting out about delaying the election because of his fear that there's going to be all sorts of problems with the voter fraud and everything. This is the same man who spent tens of millions of dollars trying to find voter fraud and couldn't find it with Republican secretaries of states and others. He put forth a commission, and you know he floated out the idea that maybe 5 million people voted illegally, illegal aliens. voted and that sort of thing. He could never prove it, but it was just floated out there. Now he's talking about delaying the election. And what has he read the Constitution? You know, he doesn't, you know, decide that. Congress decides that. And he won't walk it back. I mean, his press secretary saying that, you know, it stands on what he's saying. So now Republicans are going to delay the election?
Well, why is it? What do Republicans have to do with Trump?
Well, that's a good question.
And a tweet.
I don't know.
And a tweet by Trump at that.
Well, he tweeted it, and the secretary, his press secretary, said it stands on its own, and you know, and then Pompeo was asked about it. You know, so, all of the secretary of state. So that, you know, I don't know. With a man who has that many people out there, followers and everything, a lot of people will look at it. And you know, this station has been the number one voter fraud. You know, if we mail in ballots, it is all hell's going to break loose. And now we're going to practically shut down the post office because the idea is that, the post office, you know, we should turn it all over to the UPS or some other system instead of having, you know.
Well, that's you're conflating a lot of different things here, most of which don't get said on the air. I say the Postal Service should be shut down because it's no longer relevant and it's just being kept going at the size and pace that it's been going the last few years in order to not have to allow it to innovate. It's a government thing. Government things get preserved and last forever, whether they have meaning or need or not.
Millions of people, though, especially in rural areas, I don't know if you ever lived in a rural area, are very dependent upon
Well, good. Create a rural post office then. And then you can campaign for its being shut down because it only goes to rural areas and it's not effective or efficient. And they only vote for Republicans anyway. Thank you, Tim, for the call. 860-522-9842. Look, we've been for 4 years, we've been hearing rants about Trump and his tweets. And the tweets haven't changed. The tweets are the same. They're deliberately provocative and they tweak certain voters. And that's what he uses Twitter for. One of the things he uses it for. I don't understand what the point is for constantly being upset by his tweets. Republican Party is separating itself from his tweet on the election. You can only look at it and surmise the purpose of the tweet is to cause a certain group of voters to respond a certain way. He's practicing politics in the way that Democrats have long done it, being as provocative and targeted in his marketing of ideas as possible. Jay in Middletown. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Todd. I just want to say I want to congratulate Rob Sampson, as far as being the only Republican in Hartford. I wish these guys would grow a spine. How can we have any change in Connecticut if these guys don't stand up to the Democrats? I just don't get this.
Well, they're not legislators. If you think about what the job of a legislator is, it's to sit around, wait for something to be proposed, and then say whether you're voting yes or no on it. Like, that's the job you're running for. In general, it doesn't attract heroes, right? Heroes go into police or firework or go into the military or drive ambulances or teach in urban schools.
But, Todd, how are we going to have any change if we don't have an opposition party?
Well, we can't have change without an opposition party. I'm just saying, don't expect heroism. We need to create the opposition party by being an opposition bloc that they can catch a ride on. Politicians don't do anything on their own. It's really, they respond to movements, and that's the only way we have. So what I'm saying is be an activist, give money, join campaigns, whatever you can do, whatever is within your power. We need an active, vibrant, electrified, conservative, American-believing opposition to the communists, socialists, and their supporters. And otherwise, I don't know how we get anywhere.
Do you see what I'm
saying?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But like I said, we need more guys like Rob Sampson. Very motivated guy.
Yes. So support Rob Sampson. Give him a ton of support. And then find out who the other guys are who are willing to vote for him. or with him on certain issues and give them a lot of support. Thank you, Jay, for the call. 860-522-9842. We'll take a break and we'll continue on WTIC. Yeah, it's Thursday. We are doing it to it. Governor having his press conference in 15 minutes or so. Well, maybe 10 minutes. We'll see how it plays out. Dan in Rocky Hill. Hello, Dan. Yes, Dan. All right. It's not like Dan to not be there. He knows the protocols here. Patricia, hi.
Hi. I've been listening to your talk, and I appreciate your comments about Obama's speech, and I think you're absolutely right. And I think that they've gotten pretty slick about how they say things.
Ooh, and haven't they?
Yeah, they really
have. They are so slick in the way they trick us with words.
Yeah, and it sounds like all rosy and everything, but really it's not so rosy at all. But I wanted to point out that you kept calling him President Obama, and I think that, you know, how about former President Obama? And your other caller called in, and he called him President Obama, too. He's not our president.
Well, that's what we call former presidents. If I were talking about Ronald Reagan, I'd say President Reagan. Would you object? That's just normal.
Okay, then it's maybe just me. But every time you kept saying it, I'm like, what? He's not our president anymore. But, okay, I get it. So that's the proper protocol, is to call him president?
Yeah, it is. It's not, you know, it's not a big deal. I'm sorry if I made you feel like maybe he was president again, which I can understand you would have a flash of
anxiety. That wasn't a good feeling. Yeah, that wasn't a good feeling. Okay, thank you.
I understood, Patricia. Thank you. Let's try Dan again. Hi, Dan. What is going on with Dan? All right. And is there anyone here? Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Tony from Weathersfield.
Tony, what's going on?
Well, first of all, I wanted to call and congratulate you on your comments as far as Representative Lewis is concerned. I think he was a great civil rights warrior. But as a congressman, I think he was nothing more than an ideologue. And also, I'd like to comment on something that Tim said, and I would say to Tim, just take a look at what the Democrats want to do as far as voting procedures are concerned, and ask yourself if this does not risk voter fraud. For example, required photo IDs, that's what the conservatives are calling for. The Democrats are saying, no, we don't need any of those IDs. Mail-in ballots, Todd, how can you check the veracity of all those mail-in ballots that would be coming in? We all know.
Can I just push back against this a little bit, Tony? I mean, everything you're saying is true, but the real voter fraud is not in fraudulent individual voters. Because think how hard it is to reach critical mass one by one. The real election rigging is the fact that Democrats have taken the whole of policymaking, and all of the money they appropriate and the policy they make is directed towards blocks of voters whose loyalty they are buying. So Connecticut has been bankrupted in order to maintain the voting relationship between unions and the Democrats. There's nothing individual fraud could do to reach the level of damage that's created, is there?
I think so, because if you can't validate every vote that is supposed to be counted on Election Day, then how can you have a...
Well, I understand you need to have a secure system, but I would still say mine is a lot more dangerous than yours. Thank you for the call. I've got to hold you there.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.